Well, my talk today is titled Being Tenzo. And I chose this topic because we are nearing July 1st, which is when temple officers change at the Minnesota Zen Center. And new volunteers begin a year of service in roles that are traditional in Japanese Zen. And Eihei Dogen, who was a 13th century Japanese monk and the founder of Soto Zen, which we practice here, wrote what he called the Regulations for the Monastery, the first chapter of which is instructions for the cook or instructions for the tenzo. He wrote, from ancient times in communities practicing the Buddha's way, there have been six offices established to oversee the affairs of the community. Among these officers is the tenzo, who carries the responsibility of preparing the community's meals. Such a practice, Dogen says, requires exhausting all your energies. Well, I served as tenzo several years ago, not really because I wanted to, but because serving in certain temple officer roles is required of priests in training. And I would say that doing so has been, with the exception of sitting zazen, the most important part of my training so far. But you don't have to be a priest in training or serve as tenzo or aspire to serve as tenzo to relate to this talk today. Sometimes non-ordained people step up to the role of tenzo, as will be the case July 1st when Gage Myers will step into the role. What Dogen is talking about, as we shall see in instructions for the cook, is doing whatever we do on and off the meditation cushion wholeheartedly with our full attention, our full awareness. And through such practice, we have the opportunity to realize the truth of the Buddha's teachings. So here at the Minnesota Meditation Center, Minnesota's MZMC, as many of you know, we have one retreat per month from a half day to 7 days in length. And we haven't been in our building for more than a year, of course, but when our retreats and sesshins are in the building again, which will be soon, somebody needs to cook for everyone in attendance. And I found out about the tenzo role at my first sesshin. All this food was coming out of the kitchen, and my reaction was, never. It was immediate and instinctive, and I was never going to do that. The thing is, there was no reason for such resistance, because ordination was the farthest thing from my mind then. I really didn't even know what ordination that ordination existed. I was really new. But there was something about the role of tenzo, it just seemed so public, you know, like a performance. And everyone would know if you made a mistake. And I wanted nothing to do with it. So a few years later, almost as soon as I was on the priest training path, my teacher Tim asked if I would consider being assistant tenzo. We train for a year as assistant for each role we take on. And I was horrified. I was horrified at the mention of it. And I could have said, no, not yet. But I would have to do it eventually, I knew. And there was a lot to learn, not only to how to cook for a crowd, but how to do the very precise ritual that was developed centuries ago in Japanese monasteries. And Ben was going to be the Tenzo. And I had been in a study group with Ben where we read Dogen's instructions for the cook. So we had that in common, and I thought he would be a good Tenzo teacher. And he was. By the end of my year as assistant, I felt very well prepared. But the fear I felt as July 1 approached, when I would take over, seemed completely impervious to this new learning. Something in me was really resisting being Tenzo. Then in April, 3 months before the dreaded July 1st, I spent a week at Green Gulch in California, which is part of the San Francisco Zen Center. I was part of the student gardening program. And the student gardeners also spent quite a bit of time working in the kitchen. So in Dokusan at Green Gulch, all I could talk about was being Tenzo and how I was dreading it. And the priest I was talking to had served as Tenzo at one point, and she was trying to ease my fears by talking about what an opportunity it would be to experience this interdependent co-arising in the kitchen and all this stuff. And I took zero comfort in that. And by the end of our meeting, she actually was suggesting that I tell my teacher that maybe this isn't the right time for me to be Tenzo. But I knew that wasn't going to happen. I wasn't going to do that because Tim would just talk to me about Suzuki and beginner's mind. And besides, what had been modeled for me in priest training was to just do it. Just show up and do it. No equivocating. And for the most part, that worked for me. That had worked for me. Even though it meant I was uncomfortable a good bit of the time. Because if I waited to feel comfortable, I would never do any of it. So this is what Dogen has to say about such a predicament, how I felt as I approached July 1st. He says, in instructions to the cook, the way-seeking mind of the Tenzo is actualized by rolling up your sleeves. And that I could do. I knew how to get to work. So now I'm going to back up just a little bit. You bring your whole self to being Tenzo. Yeah. Our whole practice is about living wholeheartedly. So of course, we bring our whole selves to everything we do. But I wasn't aware of how my early experiences were affecting my approach to being Tenzo. There seemed to me to be no logical reason for the fear and especially the resistance I felt. I knew how to cook. Cooking was in my bones. I learned to cook at an early age. My mother grew up on a farm and came from a long line of Irish women who cooked on wood-burning stove. And for my mother, like many women of her generation, cooking was part of her creative expression. She was really good at it. And she was attentive not only to how things tasted, but how they looked. and she had a really strong aesthetic sense. But my mother also had a severe bipolar illness that in the 1950s was undiagnosed. And there was an associated obsessive compulsive disorder that probably had also to do with the effects of my father's alcoholism. And the obsessive compulsiveness in my mother showed up in particular in her concern for the look of things, which included me, and how it reflected on her. And what people thought was a kind of mania for my mother. And when she entertained, which is something housewives did in the 1950s, the coffee party or the luncheon was preceded by days of cleaning and polishing and cooking and baking and arranging flowers and setting the table. And as a child, of course, I wanted her to be happy and I tried to help her. But the tension in our home would build to a breaking point and there would be chaos and hysteria and everything would be out of control and it would all come crashing down at some point. And it was very confusing to me as a child. The look of things seemed more important to her than I was. And as I grew older, I grew resentful and closed up. And I ended up with a storyline that I identified with. A mother who couldn't love, an unloved daughter who in turn couldn't love. So that was part of what I brought to being Tenzo, but I wasn't aware of it. So anyway, priest training loves that ancient twisted karma. And as our Tuesday morning chant says, all my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. Karma being our conditioning and the influences that shape us. Tim says that priest training is a rock tumbler, and it smooths out our sharp edges. I think that this is true of all wholehearted practice. True for all of us, not just priest training. Our practice over time can smooth our rough edges. So for the Tenzo, each monthly retreat, July through November, is practice for Rahatsu, which is a 7-day sesshin in December to celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment. And I found out during those preceding months that I could do it. I could plan the menus, I could do the shopping, I could organize the kitchen, I could set up for and carry out orioki. Bill was my assistant Tenzo and he was great. There was nothing to worry about. But I could not relax. The tension in my body was severe, and preparing things in the kitchen in advance, you know, well in advance of the beginning of the retreats, I would feel this knot in my gut. Just this, like a fist of tension. So this again is Dogen in Instructions for the Cook. Our minds go racing around like horses running wild in the fields, while our emotions remain unmanageable like monkeys swinging in the trees. If only we would step back to carefully reflect on the horse and the monkey. our lives would naturally become one with our work. Doing so is the means whereby we turn things, even while simultaneously we are being turned by them. It is vital that we clarify and harmonize our lives with our work and not lose sight either of the absolute or the practical. Well, that stepping back, of course, is sitting zazen or meditation. But during sesshin, the pounding in my head and heart showed up the most when I was sitting zazen, as I did with everyone in the morning and at night. And at one point leading up to Rahatsu, I started to have these flashbacks or memories of trying to help my mother when everything would come crashing down. And I'd tell Tim about the tension in my body and my lousy zazen, and he'd say, "Can you just be with it?" And that's very good practice, of course. I know that now, but at the time I thought, "Be with it? There's a cyclone in my head. My heart is about to burst from my chest. All I wanted to do was get away from it." And all I could do was roll up my sleeves and get to work. And that's what I did. But I had an idea of what being Tenzo was supposed to be like and what it was supposed to look like. And I felt a failure at that. It's only in looking back that I can see that everything was as it was supposed to be. And that I was turning and being turned because I kept giving myself to the practice on the cushion and in the kitchen. And although I didn't think so at the time, I was doing it. I was doing what I needed to do. I just kept judging my experience. That was the problem. So Rohatsu finally arrived in December. And for 7 days for the Tenzo, it's preparing breakfast, lunch, and dinner, keeping the tea table supplied, and a work practice snack for 15 to 40 people per day as the week goes on. But the shopping was finished for the most part. The kitchen was stocked. The utensils and various other things we needed for serving orioki. Everything was ready. And during work practice, people from the Sangha would help Bill and me in the kitchen. We used every available surface for chopping stations, including the laundry room. And Dogen makes it clear that it's the Tenzo's job to oversee everything. So I was super organized. I had file folders for every day and recipes for every meal and lists of what needed to be measured and chopped and diagrams to show what size and shape the vegetables should be. And Dogen gives really specific instructions about washing the rice and doing many of the tasks. And this is what he says. "Handle even a single leaf of green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha." Well, here he's talking about the leafy greens as though they are your life, because they are your life. They are our life. In big mind, or in the absolute realm, everything is our life. and we give ourselves to the practice without resistance, or with resistance, if that's what you've got. We bring our whole self, our whole awareness, and our appreciation to whatever we do. And this is the wholeheartedness that allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. Dogen goes on to say, this is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation in a most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living things. So in Sesshin, everyone is immersed in mindful activity on and off the kitchen, in the cushion and, on and off the cushion. We've been on Zoom, so we haven't participated in actual Oriyoki for more than a year and a half, but soon you'll see, if you aren't familiar with Sesshin, that Oriyoki is a very precise ritual that begins in the kitchen and extends into the zendo, where the serving of the meal is a kind of dance between the tenzos and the servers and the servers and the sangha. It's really very beautiful, and it represents the interdependent nature of all life and is expressed in the meal chant. May we with all beings realize the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. Which means there are no separate givers, receivers, or gifts. Everything is interconnected. All of life is always giving and always receiving at the same time. And during Oriyoki, we make offerings to Buddha, and then later we leave those food offerings outdoors under the big oak tree to feed the animals. And we're fortunate to have this big, huge oak tree on our Zen Center land. It's a tree that's sacred to the Dakota people, and there is a Dakota man who comes to that tree to give a tobacco offering every now and then, or at least we used to see him. Anyway, while we are immersed in the activity and stillness and giving and receiving of Sesshin, this power Dogen talks about is clarifying and harmonizing things for the benefit of all beings. And it's not a power as in other being or higher power, but it is a power that is life. It's living. We empty ourselves, and empty of ourselves, we are the giver and the receiver. And we are the gift. Not one, not two. So the week of Rahatsu was going well. Despite all my obsessiveness, we settled into a rhythm. And my favorite time was at night, after everyone went to bed, and I would stay up when everything was quiet and peaceful, and I'd organize things for the next day. And this is Dogen again. All day and all night, the Tenzo has to make arrangements and prepare meals without wasting a moment. If he throws all his energy into whatever the situation truly calls for, then both the activity and the method by which he carries it out will naturally work to nurture the seeds of the Buddha Dharma. The Buddha Dharma being the inner experience of the teachings. Just taking care of the function of the Tenzo, Dogen goes on, enables all the residents in the community to carry on their practice in the most stable way. Well, right before Ruhatsu started, I ran into Ben and he suggested that I reread the part in Instructions for the Cook about parental mind. And parental mind is about a nurturing way of being. Tim calls it grandmotherly mind for that reason. And I tried to reread it, but my head was too busy to absorb anything. And at some point, I noticed a kind of satisfaction or a good feeling in making food for everyone. And I was aware that I was supporting their practice. And I was surprised to see myself to see this nurturing streak that I had either forgotten I had or didn't know I had. And it came not from reading about it, not from trying to make myself be a certain way. It seemed to come naturally from the activity of being Tenzo. But still, during Zazen, when I was sitting in meditation, I had the horses and the monkeys. And Zen teacher Bernie Glassman wrote a book titled Instructions to the Cook. It's based on his for-profit business of serving the homeless, but it's basically Dogen's teachings, just a little more psychologically oriented than Instructions for the Cook. But Glassman writes, let's see, he says, we go deeper into self by reaching further into things we fear. Our faults, knowing how they function, are our best ingredients. Our faults, knowing how they function, are our best ingredients. So toward the end of the week of Ruhatsu, Bill and I were working in the kitchen together. And he had just finished cutting up a mountain of cucumbers. And my obsessive eye for detail noticed that the cucumbers were the wrong size. And, you know, what would people think of me? So I asked Bill to recut them to make them smaller. And for a split second, there was a look in Bill's eyes. I don't know if it was hurt or anger or rage. Any of those reactions would have been understandable. Bill, by the way, gave me permission to talk about him in this talk, although I didn't tell him the specifics. But anyway, I saw the look in Bill's eyes and it pierced me. Because I love Bill, he's my Dharma brother and he was my rock as assistant Tenzo. But I was too concerned with whatever I was doing to think about what I saw or what had happened right then. And that night though, when the Zen Center was quiet and everybody was sleeping and I was preparing as usual for the next day, I felt a kind of heaviness. And then as I worked, something shifted or opened in me. And I don't want to be too dramatic. It was subtle. But all of a sudden it dawned on me that it was my mother's suffering that drove her. Suffering that was likely handed down through her mother, through her mother's mother. And now I carried it and it drove me. And I had affected Bill. And I realized that the look of things and how it reflected on me mattered more than Bill did. At least that's how I was behaving. And this is Dogen again. If only we would step back to carefully reflect on the horse and the monkey, our lives would naturally become one with our work. Doing so is the means whereby we turn things even while simultaneously we are being turned by them. It is vital that we clarify and harmonize our lives with our work and not lose sight of either the absolute or the practical. Well, it seemed to me that the self-emptying activity of Sesshin, breathing in and breathing out, serving and offering, giving and receiving, all of that placed me in the flow of the power that Dogen is talking about. That power that settles and clarifies. That power that is life, turning and being turned. And then in that space that had cleared in me in the kitchen that night, I remembered instances of my mother's nurturing. Like once when I was homesick from grade school, my mother put fresh sheets on my sick bed in the middle of the week and sprinkled this blue powder sachet under my pillow so it would smell like flowers. And another time when I was homesick from school, she brought me lunch in bed and it was on a tray and the tray had a vase with a rose in it. The weather was unusually warm for November in Minnesota. And a rose had bloomed in my mother's garden. And she entered my room with the rose on the tray saying, "The last rose of summer." And I was charmed. So as a child, I had these glimpses into my mother's nurturing. I didn't see that she was ill and that her illness limited her. I just wanted more of her. So we hear about the teaching good for nothing Zazen. And I like that teaching a lot. It means that Zazen is good, but we don't try to get something from it. When we make an effort to practice wholeheartedly, we're already awakened in all our activities, on and off the cushion. We're turning and being turned. And I'm still my mother's daughter, I still have the grooves of childhood suffering in me, but I no longer need to identify so closely with the story of the mother and daughter who couldn't love. My father and mother have been dead a long time now. But Tim has suggested that my mother is still teaching me. And I would say that yes, she is. And I'm very fortunate because I have come to realize that though she was limited in ways that deeply affected me, that her suffering deeply affected me, she was and is also very creative and intelligent and so courageous. And she has a nurturing streak that is growing ever broader. So that's what I have to share with you today. Thank you.